Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The Initial Reaction Podcast this week rolls without JP Cador in a one-week-only absence, I promise, because it gives me a chance to sit down with one of my new colleagues, Andrew Grumman, and talk all about the Milwaukee Brewers. We got nothing but Brewers on the podcast today, talking about trades, the arrival of Orlando Arcia, where we think the Brewers are here in 2016. So we had quite a lengthy discussion about everything that has transpired, particularly for the Brewers in the last 48 hours or so. Should let you know that our websites have now changed at Lake Country Now and MyCommunityNow.com. They look very different, so take a look. They look great, and you can find all of the same content that we've had up there in the past, plus some new stuff. You can check out my Preps Alcove this week on Derek Watt, formerly of Pewaukee, who is starting his first NFL training camp with the San Diego Chargers. We've got a fun feature by Chuck Delsman looking at the 18 best holes in Lake Country. He created pretty much his own golf course using holes from some of the courses in and around Lake Country, so that's a fun little feature. Also, our Wisco to Rio section is a place to be where you can check out all of the stories pertaining to our communities, both Lake Country and the Now area, as it relates to the 2016 Rio Olympics, which get underway Thursday. You should definitely check that out. One of my favorites is a story I did last week on a Greendale runner named Ariana Hilborn. She was born and raised in Greendale and went to Greendale High School, but she actually is going to be running in the Olympics in the marathon for her home country of Latvia. That because she is descendant of Latvian heritage, and she was able to apply to become a citizen a couple years ago, which she did, and that afforded her the opportunity to also compete for them in the Olympics. So that's one of the stories I enjoyed writing for that section. Again, the Wisco to Rio section. And you can check out my Suburban 16, which also covers the entire Lake Country and Now footprint, where I rank the athletes from our area, graduated from our high schools, now competing at the college pro level, a few Olympians in there. So definitely check all of that stuff out. Great way to go is lakecountrynow.com or brookfieldnow.com, wauwatosanow.com, wherever your community is. You can find us at one of those sites and get all of that great sports content. JP Cadoran, if you happen to see Time Warner Cable Sports Channel's Sports Weekly this week, you can see his piece on the Maguanago High School football team. They did kind of a cool clinic for the moms on the football team, and I'm actually interested myself in checking the whole thing out and seeing some of the things they talked about. He kind of spent some time with that whole program and captured a few things, so you should definitely check that out. It begins Tuesday night, but it'll be on at points throughout the week. Without further ado, I welcome in Andrew Grumman. Let's talk some Brewers. My guest today is Andrew Grumman. You know him from a whole bunch of places, actually. First of all, he's on our staff now at Lake Country Publications and Now Newspapers. We are super lucky to have him on board. Prior to that, he still wears many hats, covers the Milwaukee Brewers occasionally for the Associated Press. He's also, previously for Fox Sports Wisconsin. He covered the Bucks, Marquette, and the Brewers. Is there anything you didn't do, Andrew Grumman?
Breathe.
You didn't breathe. Yeah, you did not breathe. Yeah. Well, that's not going to change now that you're covering the prep beat with us here at here in Waukesha. So I did want to talk to you, pick your brain a little bit about what you thought of the Brewers at the deadline. They had obviously a lot of action. They traded Will Smith for a couple top prospects out of the San Francisco organization. Catcher Andrew Susak will probably be playing with the Brewers right away. And the headliner there is Phil Bickford.
Phil.
They're the top pitching prospect, top overall prospect in the Giants organization. The Brewers traded Jonathan LaCroix and Jeremy Jeffress to the Texas Rangers for Brinson and Ortiz. I forget their first names offhand. Luis Ortiz. I don't remember Brinson. Will Brinson. I don't know.
I think it's Luis
Brinson. Luis Brinson.
Luis and Luis.
Luis and Luis. So I'm already forgetting their names, but two of their top three prospects in that organization. And so they were very active, and they've restocked their farm system yet again. I'm curious to know if you were surprised by any of this. I think the prevailing sentiment is most people are surprised they got as much as they did for Will Smith.
And a little bit of mixed sentiment on the LaCroix deal, and I mean that earnestly. Like, half the people think it's great, right, like me, and half the people think maybe they could have gotten more like, say, Joey Gallo, the top prospect in the Rangers organization. So what was your reaction, your initial reaction to that, to the whole thing?
Well, I think it just followed the script of what they've been doing, what David Stern's plan has been since he took over as general manager, and the Will Smith trade, I think that you'll be hard pressed to find anyone that thinks the Brewers didn't make out incredibly well from that deal. You know, Will Smith, and yes, he has some years of control left, and a very valuable lefty reliever, but on a team in the situation the Brewers are in, relievers you sell high on, and you can find relievers to make up a bullpen for a bad team, and to get. You know, Andrew Susek is a guy that will help this big league team at some point. And, you know, they're giving Manny Pena a shot to be the backup or whatever to Maldonado right now. But he's a guy that's proven he's capable of playing in the big leagues. But to get a guy like Phil Bickford, who not only is the Giants' number one prospect, but is probably one of the top pitching prospects in baseball. You know, probably I think multiple publications have him in that 25 to 40 range, and you know, overall are a little higher than that, but a guy that's performed in the minor leagues, has plus stuff, and projects at worst, you know, you see those projections at worst to be a guy that could be a bullpen arm if he doesn't make it as a starter, and it's way too early obviously to know about that. But so I think, yeah, very surprised about the Smith haul, but teams often overpay relievers at the deadline. And then the LaCroix trade, LaCroix and Jeffress trade, I think it was very fair for both teams. Yeah, Texas is getting a lot of help, but with the Brewers, you know, went with, you got two prospects that are in the top 100 of all of baseball by multiple publications. You know, guys that fit into what they're doing. You know, an athletic up the middle outfielder, in a pitching prospect that was the top pitching prospects in the Texas organization, and the player to be named later. I wouldn't, you know, discount that as well. I think, and you know, my belief is that's going to be a high level prospect too, and you know, maybe a guy from the draft that can't be traded yet, or somebody that the Brewers want to scout a little more off a list to find out who they want. So I think made out great on the Will Smith deal. And I think the LaCroix trade was very fair, and they got very good return, because you know, I think if people in Milwaukee maybe overvalue Jonathan LaCroix a little bit. Fantastic player, one of the best catchers in baseball. But if you look at the grand scheme of things offensively, he's an above average player that's approaching that age threshold as a catcher where you start to see a decline. And so I think maybe the return expectations were a little unrealistic from certain segments of the fan base. And it happens a lot. You fall in love with a name on a team's prospect list, and I think Joey Gallo was that this year.
Definitely.
And so if they're disappointed they didn't get Joey Gallo, well, I think, you know, I don't know this, but maybe they could have got just Joey Gallo or three prospects instead of just the one. So I don't know that for sure, but maybe that's how it's always the quality versus quantity argument.
Yeah.
And the Brewers chose to go 3-for-2 there.
You bring up so many good points, and I really think the coverage around the trade deadline influenced how fans reacted to the Brewers in a lot of different ways. First of all, you're talking about the relief pitcher market, which is crazy this year, and you look at the returns that the Yankees received for Aroldis Chapman and Andrew Miller, particularly Miller, which came in the wake of the Saturday night trade that supposedly went through with the Brewers and the Indians. Well, not supposedly. It went through awaiting LaCroix's approval. A lot of people were down on that package.
Right.
There was no top five prospect from the Indians coming to Milwaukee. There was a really good catching prospect in Francisco Mejia. But when LaCroix vetoed that trade, a lot of people were pretty happy because they had just turned around and gotten Andrew Miller for two big-time prospects that the Brewers wanted for LaCroix.
Right.
So I think that sort of clouded their perception. And then also with the LaCroix trade, to have Jeremy Jefferson there, having seen what Will Smith got them, having seen what Miller and Chapman fetched, they're thinking Jeremy Jefferson basically looks like a throw-in and a deal where, if you've got those two guys together, knowing that A, LaCroix is great, and Jefferson is part of this relief market that is so inflated right now, they're thinking maybe you should get a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I think if the name Joey Gallo hadn't been bandied about as sort of the assumed piece coming back the other way by both Rangers writers and fans, everyone said it's understood Gallo will be the centerpiece. Everybody got fixated on that. It's exactly what happened in the NFL draft when Miles Jack was falling and falling and falling, and everyone thought the Packers should take a risk on the guy. And I have nothing. I mean, if Gallo were part of the deal, I certainly wouldn't have minded it. That's great. The thing that kind of makes me leery is that in the post-steroid era, there aren't many pure power guys that just mash home runs but might strike out a lot or have low average who really are fundamentally crucial to a team. Chris Carter, I think, is a fair comparison.
Right.
I love watching Chris Carter. I love him. But he's cheap because the only thing he does is hit home runs, which is not a skill you laugh at by any stretch of the imagination. That's huge. Which is why I think Chris Carter is such a deft offseason signing. I think it's great to have him. But you don't want to give away one of your top trade chips, really, in the last several years in Jonathan LaCroix and just get a guy who hits home runs, because those guys, their careers don't last very long. They're
right.
Like 4-year careers. Best case scenario, you got Giancarlo Stanton or Prince Fielder. Yeah, it could work out that way. That could be great. I think you have just as good a chance getting these two guys, Brinson and Ortiz, based on what we've seen from the minors and the projections. Those guys have just as good a chance to be stars for the Brewers than Joey Gallo does. And I think their chance of lasting longer is even greater. So I'm very happy with that trade.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I was, even before all this stuff with Gallo and the Brewers were rumored, listen to different podcasts that talk about prospects and stuff like that. And there was a very, lengthy argument about Joey Gallo in the last couple of weeks between, two knowledgeable minds in the prospect and the evaluation game about what is Joey Gallo? Is Joey Gallo going to be, a guy that hits 50 home runs, 40 home runs a year? Or is he Russell Branyon? That was
yes.
A name that was thrown out there.
Ah, delightful. Again, a delightful player.
Right.
A delightful player. But you get him on a minimum deal for $2 million a year or something.
And you're exactly right about guys that rely so heavily on home run lasting. Mark Reynolds is another example. He had those 2 years, 3 years in Arizona where he was a really good player. But eventually, high strikeout, low contact, guys that don't walk, and Reynolds walked more than Gallo has shown in the minor leagues.
Right.
Eventually it catches up to them, and do they have a place in the big leagues? Of course, no doubt. But Gallo is talked about by Brewers fans as not getting him like he's this sure thing superstar. Well, he's got a lot of issues and risks too. They bring up the risks that Brinson has and blah, blah, blah. The bottom line is every one of these guys has question marks and risks. There's
no such
thing as a sure thing. And the Brewers, I would imagine the metric system that they have in place now and all the Ivy League processes and analysis they put into guys felt that Brinson and Ortiz were better matches for what they're trying to do than a guy like Gallo. I guarantee you they shopped Lucroy and Jeffers separately and had offers for both separately.
Right.
And decided that this package together was better than what they would get. Separately, the relief pitcher market is crazy, but there are certain guys that don't bring as much of a haul back as others, and depends on control, and Will Smith is left-handed, Chapman's left-handed, Miller's left-handed.
Oh yeah, good point.
And Jeffress is having a fine year, but he's not, obviously not on the level of Chapman and Miller to expect those results. That's why I was kind of blown away by what they got for Will Smith,
because
he's not even close to that level, but the control with him factored into that big time. So I guarantee you they started with two separate deals and kind of pieced it together. Maybe it was Brinson for Lucroy was Texas's offer, but they wanted Jeffress too, and then the Brewers came back with, okay, Ortiz and a player to be named later to make that work.
Yeah, yeah.
So you just never know how, what was even on the table. Maybe Gallo's name never even came up from Texas.
Jeffress is an interesting pitcher in that he throws hard,
yeah,
but he doesn't get a lot of strikeouts.
No.
He's not blowing people away. He does get a lot of ground balls. And I think, and this idea has sort of made it through the rounds, Brewers Twitter and whatnot, that he's probably their third best relief pitcher behind Will Smith and really Tyler Thornburg, who might be the best relief pitcher on this team this year statistically. If you look at all the peripheral stats, he's probably going to be your quote unquote closer going forward, if it matters for a team that's not going to the playoffs to have a closer. I certainly don't think it does, but they didn't really even trade their best relief pitcher. And it's not just us who feel that way or know that. I mean, like you said, you talked about the Yale and Harvard analytics
right
that go into this. I mean, every front office has that.
Yeah, nowadays.
You're
yeah
not fooling anybody. Maybe you're fooling the Diamondbacks if you trade with them. But no other team is completely clueless on this stuff. And somebody made this point, a couple people made this point afterwards. Jeremy Jeffress is a great story in that he had a lot of trouble with marijuana, and he was suspended a couple times and was able to really turn his life around and become just not only a great pitcher, but a great person. I mean, it really is a great story. But if for some reason he slips backward,
yeah.
he's another marijuana test away from being banned, I think,
forever. For life, yeah.
So that's almost like an injury risk. And yeah. not that you think that he's going to lapse and you hope not, but it's like if somebody has had, say, shoulder injuries in the past, they're one bad pitch away from being out of the game. And you can't discount that when you're talking about the business of the game. You could say, well, he's a fine young man and he's turned his life around, and I really believe that's true. But that is an added risk for a team to take that on, knowing that, you know, there could be some, again, it's just like an injury. So maybe there is a little less value in him as a relief pitcher than Will Smith. And I mean, I think that's borne out, but you're right. We don't know what pieces he fetched versus what pieces LaCroix fetched in that trade. Again, I'm really ecstatic about it. I think that was an outstanding deal. I think they got as much as they possibly could hope for. And I think there's just this idea that at trade season, you're only happy if you fleece the other team.
Right.
You're
right.
Only happy if you got something that you feel like you got the better end of the deal. Doug Belvin has never operated that way, and I know he's not in charge anymore, but he's always been about, look, we want to do the balance thing. I mean, Nori Aoki for Will Smith is a good example a few years ago. The Royals got a guy who contributed as they were on their way up. I don't particularly think Nori Aoki was as valuable as Will Smith was as a left-handed pitcher, a stud bullpen arm. But both sides got something out of that deal, so it worked out, I think.
I think people nowadays, because they're so prevalent, rely too much on prospect lists.
Absolutely,
yes. MLB Pipeline has become huge. Baseball America has a list readily available.
And even though we know that, like, the number one prospect in one organization right. is as good as the seventh in another, yeah. it just doesn't
it's hard
work
to compare.
That way. Yeah.
And I get it. That's what a lot of fans have to rely on experts' opinions. That's what's out there for, you know, a fan to go and look at to say, where does this guy rank in this guy's opinion?
Yeah.
But it's an opinion, and it's a couple people's opinions that go into these lists that I think people take as the end-all, be-all. I don't know the answer to this. I'd be curious to find out, do general managers like David Stearns even look at these?
Yeah.
Or do they just go off their own work? And I would tend to believe that they go more off their own work than the list. They might glance at them. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think people just rely so heavily on that nowadays because it's out there. It's the same with in a lot of different things like mock drafts in the NFL and stuff like that because this information is out there and these guys are. And the guys that put them together know what they're doing, obviously, but
right.
it's a couple people's opinion and other people get a different opinions. And it's, I just would caution people to look at these as what teams operate solely off of because it's
yeah.
not.
Yeah, even, I mean, I would say even NFL, it's even a little easier than this because at least there you've seen these kids play in college.
Yeah,
so you
right.
can maybe make an assessment as a fan at home. We legitimately have never seen any of
no.
these guys play. And yep. we couldn't, obviously you get glimpses of them at the Futures game or maybe in a minor league game, but I mean, come on, these kids are in high school and college 2 years ago, nobody saw them play, nobody knows what they're
doing. And one thing that you know, Craig Counsell has cautioned, Ron Reinicke before, Doug Melvin I've heard it from, is minor league stats are really, really deceiving as well, too. You know, a perfect example is the Brewers with Colorado
oh, right.
Springs.
No doubt, disaster.
You know, they're not even looking at stats. They don't look at Willie Peralta's ERA. They're looking at the process and little things within his start and command. And they get reports and they read that. They don't look at numbers. They don't look at batting averages in AAA. You know, Ramon Flores will hit .350 in AAA, and you see what he does as a big leaguer. You know, so that minor league stats, sure, they're nice. Again, it's a tool for people to look at. But there's so much other evaluation that is so much more important to these teams. Just raw talent, raw ability is what's going to be at the top of that list. And Brinson checks every box.
Yes, he does.
In that category. And Ortiz checks almost every box. It's when you look at pitchers. Bickford checks a lot of boxes. When you look at what the Brewers organization is now looking for in a pitcher, a you know, bigger bodied guy that has plus velocity on his fastball. And so I think it's just continued what the Brewers have been looking for in this rebuilding process, up the middle prospects with multiple tools and just raw talent and body size, body type that
right.
that projects to be, you know, a big league player.
Right. And to circle back to the player to be named later, I think a lot of Brewers fans remember that Michael Brantley was the player to be named later when he came over from Cleveland in the Sabathia, came over to Cleveland in the Sabathia trade. If I recall, that was structured sort of strangely where if the Brewers had made the playoffs, it was Brantley, and my understanding is if they had, and it would have been Taylor Green, it might not have been quite that simple.
It was something like that.
Might have been number of games won or something like that, but anyway, the Brewers did succeed, so the player that the Brewers valued more went over to Cleveland to complete the deal, which I thought was a clever way of structuring it. I mean, it makes sense. You say, we're going to get full value out of Sabathia, we want to get full value in return. I think, I mean, that could be in play here. My guess is more like what you're saying, sometimes you're choosing between three guys or something, and they're all top-level guys. You want to make sure none of them get hurt, and sort of now the Rangers are the one assuming the risk for the rest of the year because one of those guys get hurt, you can go with the other one in the trade. But like you said, certainly the player to be named can't be glossed over.
I actually think it's going to be one of somebody that's on, you know, the top 15 or of the list that you can find of the top prospects for the Indians, or it was somebody that was drafted in 2016 that might not be on that list yet or can't be traded yet because of the rules of the draft. And you have the people that, you know, I just love that. It was a Mets writer, and this kind of sums up the trade deadline. They were supposed to get Brandon Nimmo in the Jay Bruce trade, but when the medicals fell apart, it ended up being Dilson Herrera instead of Nimmo. And someone said, the Reds were supposed to get him. A Reds writer said that there are an awful lot of fans that hated getting that Brandon Nimmo that are upset that Brandon Nimmo's not coming.
Right. Because you assume at all times that someone is pulling the wool over your eyes, that you're the one getting fleeced. Oh, we're getting a guy I don't want. Oh, maybe there's some value to him now that the other team wanted him back. You know, that's just, I guess, the nature of the beast. I get a little frustrated with that.
And you can't evaluate these trades right now. I mean, you can't evaluate the Gomez Fires trade for a couple more years. Right. I mean, Brett Phillips is not having the greatest year in Double A. Does that make him less of a prospect? No. I don't guarantee the Brewers don't think any differently of Brett Phillips right now than they did back then. You can't judge these trades right away. And even if Jonathan Lucroy wins World Series MVP, you can't say it was a bad trade for the Brewers because Jonathan Lucroy wasn't going to help this team do much of anything the rest of the year. Anyway, because they're just not going anywhere.
So. And is it the fault of the Brewers if these guys do flame out? I mean, you could maybe blame player development out of that, but maybe it's just...
It's a risk.
At the time, it was the right amount of value. I mean, that's how I feel about Gomez Fires, was that those four guys, I thought the value was extremely positive. And all four of those guys have little things that
have
cropped up.
And you didn't know Adrian Hauser was going to have Tommy John.
You didn't know Josh Hader was going to be the best prospect of the lot, at least after 1 year in the organization.
Well, then you look at the Gerardo Parra...
Zach Davies, which looks like an absolute steal.
It was kind of a afterthought. Well, Zach Davies, nice pitcher. Well, now he's one of the best rookie pitchers in the National League.
And where's Gerardo Parra?
Gerardo Parra's in Colorado.
Right.
And he didn't help him do much.
Right.
So.
No, he was actually really bad after the deadline last year, and the Orioles did not.
It's a crapshoot. And this is what the predicament the Brewers are in. They're obviously in this rebuilding phase, small market team. They had a lot of analytics that went into opting what their offer was to Jonathan Lucroy as far as an extension. They do not believe in paying catchers over a certain value once they reach 30.
Right.
And Lucroy wanted more, and once that came to a pass, there was going to be a breakup between the two.
Yep.
And they had to do it now or maybe in the offseason to get value back for him, because control is so much a part of what you get back in these trades. And the Indians not only have Lucroy for this year, but they have him for the Rangers. The Indians almost had him. The Rangers have him for the end of this year and going into next year.
Harsh reality with catchers. I mean, Joe Mauer is sort of the prototype for this, in that truly one of the best catchers in baseball for a period of time. But the depreciation, it happens like overnight.
It's like a running back in the NFL.
Yeah, exactly. They just, at some point, everything gives way. And then, I mean, Joe Mauer is probably not the best example here because he was as good a hitter as anybody in baseball. But catchers, by and large, are valued as catchers. So, for example, Jonathan Lucroy is awesome. No one's saying he's one of the top five best hitters in baseball. He might be one of the top five catchers.
Catchers, yeah.
But your value goes down if you have to play DH or first base.
Definitely.
And there are certainly guys who've transcended that. I mean, guys like Mike Piazza. There are plenty of guys who have gone from being a catcher to being a credible offensive player. But the starting point usually isn't as high. I mean, Jonathan LaCroix let's say he played middle infield. Well, that's not a good example because he actually would be pretty decent middle infielder as a hitter, be very good. But if he's your first baseman, he's probably just okay.
Average.
He's average.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you need him to be a catcher. But at age 31, 32, 33, those skills start to go. They start taking away on your offensive game. I mean, that you have to be proactive with catchers. So, like you said, this was the absolute right thing to do, as great as he was.
Look at Brian McCann. He was one of the best offensive catchers ever.
Yeah.
And he hit an age now where, sure, is he producing for a catcher really well? Yes, he's hitting 15 home runs, but he's hitting 230.
Right.
And he's considered one of the top offensive catchers in baseball. Look at Miguel Montero. He hit a wall. He's done. I mean, he can't hit anymore. Now he's not a starting catcher. Now, could Jonathan LaCroix be an exception to that? Sure. But overwhelming odds say that once catchers hit a certain age, because it takes so much to be a good hitter and be good behind the plate. And nowadays, teams are starting to value again the better receivers. They're looking at those numbers, how many strikes you get.
Absolutely.
Over some offensive skills at times. So. That's why the Brewers didn't offer LaCroix what he wanted. And that's going to be really interesting to see what he gets in the open market when he becomes available. Because Texas is a place he would love to stay. So as close to Louisiana, which is home to him, as he's going to get. And we'll see what comes of that. But it's too bad. These things happen. Brewer fans are used to losing fan favorites.
It's just the
reality. And LaCroix was a fantastic member of the organization. Not only a good player, but a good person that did a lot of good things in the community. It's hard to see those guys leave, and I think that's part of some of the we didn't get enough back. Well, as much as you want to have that factor in, what he does in the community and what he is in the clubhouse doesn't really play too much of what you get back in a trade. But LaCroix was great for this organization, and it's just, I think that's part of the frustration is that fans really liked him, and they should have really liked him.
So you talked briefly about Brett Phillips, because the other side of this equation is another top Brewers prospect, Orlando Arcia, who has been recalled to the team. He'll join them in San Diego for the middle of that series, and he's going to be playing shortstop. They've said right out of the bat, and we've had our eye on Arcia for a while. He's been a top 10 prospect in all of baseball for a couple years now. And interesting timing in that, it's pretty much the point where the Brewers are saying, this year we're moving on for sure, moving toward 2017. Not that there was ever a doubt, but this is for sure the movement toward the future. And to bring him up now seems, I guess, a little bit different, particularly because shortstop and second base are pretty solidified.
Right.
With Jonathan Villar and Scooter Jeanette, Hernan Perez playing third base. I mean, he's a utility guy, but he's just crushing the ball right now. I mean, nobody thinks that'll last for the rest of the season, but it seems like you don't want to get him out of the lineup. So now Villar moves from short to third. Not terribly thrilled with that move, and he's not. I ultimately thought he was going to go to second, but then Scooter Jeanette's been too credible to take out of the lineup. I mean, Jeanette's had, I would say, a decent year. So. I'm interested in the timing. I guess it doesn't ultimately matter, and I'm excited to see Arcia. I worry that I don't want Jonathan Villar to fall into the picture either, because I think he could be part of the future.
I'm surprised by the timing. I don't know when I wouldn't have been surprised with the timing. Maybe
if
September.
It had been any time before September.
It's curious that it's the day after the trade deadline, and maybe that was the day they had in mind that we're going to flip the switch. But, why is it, why now? Well, Council's quote was, it's time. Well, why is now the time? I guess, I don't know. No one knows the answer to that question except them. Orlando Arcia, the skills are unquestioned. The talent's unquestioned. Everyone that's played with him in AAA that's come up or in lower levels, the minors just rave about him. He hasn't had the greatest of season in AAA.
Right.
Hitting 268 or 269, somewhere around there in Colorado Springs, isn't that good.
Nope.
I wonder if it's, okay, I'm ready.
I'm bored done with AAA, this. Let's move on.
That would not be surprising. That's happened a lot with guys in the minor leagues. And the interesting case is VR, because coming into the season, everyone thought, well, he's a stopgap.
Totally.
He's going to be here. He'll play shortstop till Arcia's ready, and then we'll move on, or we'll see what's there. Nobody saw this coming. I mean, Jonathan Villar has been one of the top two, three, four offensive shortstops in baseball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as the leading stolen base guy in the National League.
And he's very young. I mean, 23, 24 years old.
Gosh, that blows my mind. I feel like he's like 28, right. 29, but he's and not.
He has proven that he has a part in this future. I think ultimately that's at second base. Scooter Jeanette's having a nice year, but I don't know long term if he fits into the plan. I guess that's to be determined. So I think second base is maybe what we'll see VR next year or moving forward. But he has kind of etched himself into that plan where earlier in the year he was just a stopgap like he was in Houston. I mean, this kid's had this happen to him twice.
Yeah.
With Correa last year and now Arcia. He can play third base defensively. There's no question. And maybe that's where he is the end of this year and maybe next year going forward. But I think ultimately second base is probably better. But Hernan Perez has also thrown himself into to have some role in this team, at least right. in the next few years. And they'll play him in right field. He'll still be in the lineup. And he's never played the outfield before, but he has proven that he's okay out there. And they can't get much worse than the production they're getting
right.
out of right field with Santana still out. So, yeah, it just messes with I mean, you thought Hernan Perez was settling into that third base job for the rest of the year, but now he's going to be shifting around a lot. I think, it adds excitement, definitely. I mean, now people have a reason to watch quite a bit the rest of the year to see what this kid can do over. And it's an extended period of time, and that was kind of the argument I kind of read from between the lines of what counsel said is that it's not just September that,
right.
you know, he now gets 2 months to see if he's ready to be the starting shortstop next year. And hopefully this doesn't affect Jonathan Villar because he has probably been the brightest spot this year. He's put all that talent he's had together and it's going to be a big part of this team moving forward.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm a little bit. I look at Arcia as kind of a guy. I would love for him to salvage this season a little bit. And obviously, I didn't expect wins and losses to be favorable this year, and they're not. They're right about where I thought they'd be. Maybe slightly better. Maybe I don't know. Probably right where I thought they'd be. There are a couple reasons though why I really think this season has been frustrating. And you talked about this prospect, Domingo Santana, who has been unhealthy all year long, and that's a problem. And Brett Phillips and guys like that. The minor league, top guys in the minor leagues have really across the board been pretty bad. Mm-hmm. Josh Hader was good at AA, very good. Not a AAA, and you wonder, I mean, is Colorado Springs going to screw up every single prospect in the organization? I mean, Jorge Lopez fell off a cliff. Because, I mean, you gotta figure the Mountaineer has some mental impact. Even if it doesn't have a physical impact as broadly as we think it does, it's screwing with guys. And offensively, we haven't seen anybody really rise to the occasion. The only exception, I would say, is Asan Diaz with the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers, a future shortstop prospect, has been fantastic. Maybe third base prospect down the line. So, that's been great, but like, across the board, the prospects in the system have struggled really badly, including Arcia. And the second thing that has made me really doubt this year or be frustrated by this year is the starting pitching has been lousy. I mean, Jimmy Nelson, I'm sorry if this is maybe jumping the gun, but I think we've reached a point where I don't think Jimmy Nelson can do this as a... He can certainly pitch in the big leagues. He can be maybe a number five starter, number four starter, and I don't even care about the numbers. But like, if you think he's your best guy going forward, I mean, you can't win with him at the top of your rotation. You need better arms than that. His FIP is terrible, if we're talking about sabermetric stats. He doesn't pitch deep into games, at least he hasn't since the start of June. He's only gone past the sixth inning once since May 29th. So that's a huge problem. And he's the only guy from the starting rotation Chase Anderson is still there, but we all understand he's only here for a short time until they can really replace him with a higher ceiling guy. The entire starting rotation is bombed. Willie Peralta and Taylor Youngman have been in AAA most of the year now. Matt Garza started on the DL. He's been fine, but no.
He is what he is.
He is what he is. Obviously, Zach Davies has been a beautiful bright spot. He started the year at AAA, and he's probably here for the long haul, but no one is putting him up on a pedestal saying, that's a future top three pitcher in your rotation. Maybe he becomes that. Fantastic. But that's why these deals are so important for me. I mean, Bickford maybe isn't as highly thought of as he once was, but he's still thought of as a guy who can be a top three rotation guy. Ortiz is definitely in that spot right now. So we need to see those guys. Because right now, I really thought this team sneakily could have been close to 500 next year. That no longer is something I feel is the case because of the guys who have struggled at the lower levels and the pitching struggling at the upper level. So I'm really hopeful Arcia shows us over the next 2 months that, hey, I can be a really reliable stud in the middle of the infield. And now you can build around me. You can keep VR. Maybe you're going to move Jeanette at some point in the offseason. Maybe he's even an August deadline guy. You get VR at second. You find a third baseman in free agency. You've still got Chris Carter hitting dingers over at first base. Ryan Braun is really playing at a high level. I mean, there's a chance that this lineup could be, maybe Andrew Susak is a good starting catcher. I mean, there's a chance that this could be a decent lineup next year again. But the pitching is not going to be good next year.
Yeah, it's really hard. That's the hardest thing to find in a rebuild is pitching, because it's just such a crapshoot. And you're right. Nelson has been bad.
Bad, man.
For the last month and a half at least, struggling to go six innings.
And he's 27. Like, yeah, if he's at his peak, he doesn't get better from here.
Just the command has just been so off.
Yes.
And
I want to love him.
He's just not a front of the rotation pitcher.
Right.
He's a guy that can pitch. You know, he's a three at best, maybe four or five on a good team. You know, Zach Davies kind of fits into that.
Yep.
That character. There just are so few ones, and there's not that many guys that are really, you know, you can say is, okay, he's a number two, that next tier down. And the Brewers thought maybe they had someone that are closer to that two range. Peralta, they thought could have been that. He's not. Nelson, they thought, probably not. Jorge Lopez, who knows what happened to him? I mean, Colorado Springs, yes, there's a huge mental game. I forget who it was, but there's a pitcher I talked to a year ago when he came up, and he was pitching well in Colorado Springs. And at the time I was working on a story that never happened about, you know, what are the Brewers going to do with Colorado Springs and pitching?
Right.
And he says that, yeah, the mental factor is so huge. You just have to, you have to ignore it and not worry about the results and power through. And I think that hurts so many guys. I think Lopez is a prime example of that. And you get into a point to where maybe they skip Colorado Springs. You just throw Tim Dillard's out at Colorado Springs,
sure,
and have everyone else at Biloxi and make that jump Biloxi to Milwaukee. That's not unheard of. But yeah, you're right. The pitching and the final thing that the Brewers are going to have to find is that true number one pitcher. And for small organizations like the Brewers, there's only one, maybe two ways to do that. They're not going to sign one. That's for sure.
No, right.
You have to get one in the draft.
Him,
you have to get one in the draft, or you have to trade for him. And that's why getting Ortiz, getting Bickford are important to take chances on guys that can fill out a rotation. So Junior Guerra is not your best pitcher every year. And I like Junior Guerra.
Right.
He's a nice story, but he's 31.
Yep.
And you know, he's by far not part of this rebuilding process.
Yeah, but it's probably not fair that we don't mention him when we're talking about the rotation.
He's had a great year. It's him and Davies. It's been him and Davies.
And Junior Guerra has made it to, I mean, Corey Seager is in the National League, so I don't think he can win Rookie of the Year, but dude is going to get some votes.
Seager, Story, Diaz.
Yeah, and Diaz being hurt, I really feel like Junior Guerra right now is your third best rookie in the year voting.
The what might hurt him there is age, because people won't.
They won't think of him
as a rookie. That's what hurt Casey McGee, I think,
that first
year he had with the Brewers. But you're right about the top prospects struggling. Santana is a huge concern. This should have been his year to break out.
Yep.
Phillips struggling in Biloxi. All those guys are struggling in Biloxi. The Nottingham had one nice stretch, but other than that,
he's
struggled. Brevard has been one of the worst teams in the minor leagues for a lot of reasons. There's not a ton of prospects there all year. Corey Ray is there now. They have some guys that have been added there now. You're right. Who would be the minor league player of the year right now? Probably Ison Diaz.
Absolutely.
And they would have to hope he finishes strong, because he had to raise his average just to get through seven.
Right, he had a slow start to the year. And it is important to remember that a lot of these guys are young for the ages
that
they're playing. Like, Corey Ray is struggling mightily, but he's getting thrown into the fire at high advanced single A, which is rare for a...
Well, Phillips is repeating a level he was at last
year,
and that's what's concerning. But it's so far from, you know, giving up, quote unquote, on these guys. And I think that's what's been, you're right, the most disappointing about these years is guys that should have stepped up into an opportunity haven't. Other than, there's been a couple. Davies, I think, VR, Ison Diaz is so far down the road.
Hard to think about
It's hard to include him into that mix. But that's why you're right about Arcia. If he can show these flashes over these last couple months. But then I also worry on the other end. I mean, what if he struggles right away? Alex Bregman is 0 for 18 before he got his first hit, and he's considered the top hitting prospect in baseball. If Arcia struggles, there shouldn't be a mass panic from Brewers fans that, oh, this guy's overrated, and he's not the...
Right.
The pressure should not be on him with every pitch, every at-bat. Let him play, let him gain experience this year.
Yeah.
So moving forward, he has this to take from.
And more importantly, not, well, the fans... Well, the fans react. They'll react either way. It's just how does the player interpret that? Like the player could that could be valuable to the player to gauge fan reaction or whatever. I agree with that completely. It's not going to be like Ryan Braun, who homered in his first game and then never
in
looked
San Diego,
back
by
in
the
San
way,
Diego.
Too.
Yep,
that's it's debuting.
That seems to be the place for the Brewers to bring up their best. So yes, it's it has been a little bit of a challenging year on that front. I am definitely
and amazingly, there are only 11 games or what 12 games under 500.
Yeah, well, and
somewhere around
is,
that range,
there is some upside in that. LaCroix had a bad year last year, rehabbed his value completely to be one of the best players at his position, and even
they
put
got
you in
something
position.
From Aaron Hill, it was
exactly.
A win
this
year.
You forget about Aaron Hill, who was not only was he sort of just like the only veteran on this team, but then he was awful in April and totally turned it around to the point that he could become a trade chip earlier in the deadline. So I forgot Aaron Hill. Oh man, I forgot he was on this team. Which is too bad because he was very good. You forget. So, Andrew, thanks for chatting with me about the Brewers. I am optimistic going forward. I think maybe I've given up on 2017 being a competitive year, but I am still optimistic that this team is on track to be good in 2018, not just average, good in 2018.
I think you can expect 2017 to be a competitive year.
Yeah, well, that would be nice. That would be nice.
I think that there's enough signs there, but you look at the loads of talent that they have in this organization.
Some of those guys are
going to
hit.
It's hard not to be excited, and you're bound to have a couple of these guys hit and work out, and they still have more trade pieces going forward that they can move. Obviously not the top of the line, like maybe LaCroix, Braun's in the whole category by himself.
But Jeanette, Blaine
Boyer,
Jeanette
gets
Carlos
something
Torres.
Back. You know, Torres and Boyer, people still overpay for relievers in August.
Do it again.
I mean, obviously they're not going to bring back Phil Bickford, number one prospect, but you'll get something for him. Remember, you never discount guys you get in these trades.
Right.
I mean, Aramis Ramirez was a late trade last year. And Jonathan Barrios, before he had an injury, looked like a guy that could contribute to a major league team.
Totally.
So, I still think that there's so much talent in this organization. I can't remember a time where there's been even close to this amount of talent in the organization. It's exciting, but again, there's no sure thing, and there's no easy way, no shortcuts to doing this. It's going to take time, and the Cubs, took 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And it's hard to have that patience as a fan base, and they're going to have to. This is just year one of that. And I think the Brewers started from a much better place than a lot of
and
teams.
I think you could argue it's also year two. I mean, really, the Gallardo trade felt like that first move.
So I just think it's a good time to be optimistic as a Brewer fan. It's hard. The Major League product might not reflect it, but you got to be looking for little things and little signs, and Arcia is a good place to start.
All right, folks, enjoy your Orlando Arcia for the rest of the year, and we will hopefully see better things in the future. Thanks for listening to Initial Reaction.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.